This is an excerpt from a novel entitled Timeless by Boone. I have that lucky feeling and I try to tell Sarah, "Listen, I feel lucky." "Hoop-dee-doo," she says unimpressed. She doesn't understand. I don't feel like arguing. I certainly don't feel like explaining. "You're not getting the money," she adds. "I'm telling you to give me that money." "No, you're a hard-headed bitch, aren't you? We've only got $50 left and we have to make it last." I shift my position from standing belligerently in the middle of the camper to a more relaxed stance and lean against the bunk. Sarah sits in the rear of the camper on the floor, her back against the wall panel. She has the money box in a corner, protected by the food cabinet, her leg, and her hand. "Sarah, that crap game starts in about 15 minutes. I'm going to be there. Now give me that 50 bucks and don't give me any more shit." She starts crying. "Listen, crying won't work this time." She continues to cry for a moment, then suddenly and savagely throws the metal money box up towards me. It strikes the countertop and bounces against the side window, landing on the cushioned seat below it. The window isn't broken, but I can see a big scratch. I pick up the box and sit on the cushion. "Nice," I say facetiously. "Very nice. Tear up the whole truck, why don't you?" "Maybe I will. Maybe I'll just set the whole damn thing on fire." "Sarah," I begin, "anything you might do would not surprise me. Disappoint me, hurt me, but certainly not surprise me. You are capable of anything, I know that." I count the money. Sarah remains sitting on the floor and picks at a piece of torn linoleum. "Okay, listen, there's $49.42 in here, right?" "Right. So I'm just going to take 25. How's that?" "Take it all," she blubbers. "Why don't you just take it all out and drop it down a sewer? That's where it's going anyway, isn't it?" "No, it's not. I can't explain this to you, but I feel lucky. I know how to shoot dice. I promise you, I'll win. It's not like just gambling. I know I'm going to win. That's different, you know?" "No, I don't know. Just get the hell out of here." I put my hand on the door handle but hesitate. I remove my hand. "I'm not leaving till you stop crying. A crying woman can break your luck." She wipes her eyes with her hands and forearms. She pulls the bottom of her shirt out of her shorts and dabs at her face. "Throw me my purse." I toss it to her, and she pulls out a couple of ragged pink tissues and blots beneath her eyes. She looks up at me, and her moist eyes sparkle above her pouty mouth. Even if you do win, they won't let you keep the money? Little bar like this out in the woods late at night? There's no way they're gonna let you, a stranger, waltz in there and take their money. They'll knock you on the head for sure." "I've been in situations like this before. I can handle it." "Yeah, well, I just hope you know what you're doing." The dice roll. I can hear them as I walk into the concrete block building. I can hear them chattering in the rear of the dimly lit room. Chattering bones. Dice. Rolling on the green felt of the pool table. "Come here, Chief, let me show you something," my dad says. I'm lying on the floor of my parents' living room. My left shoulder rests on a large throw pillow. My head is propped up by the edge of the couch. I try to watch a football game, but I'm really half asleep. "Hey, Tapple, turn over here." I roll slowly away from the game and towards Dad. "What?" I mutter. "Watch old Dad throw the bones." I'm alert at this. Dad kneels a few feet away on a thick throw rug. He has dice in his right hand that is raised above his head. He snaps them sharply, clicking, clicking. I crawl towards him, smiling. My dad always has something fun to do. He positions two shoeboxes holding my baseball card collection on the hardwood floor, and he tosses the dice against them. I watch his every move, noting the deftness of his hands and wrists. There's style in this game. I love games. I'm going to win me a bunch of money at the Elks tonight, and you know what I'm going to do with it? Still smiling because my father's joy and excitement seeps into me. I shake my head. I'm going to buy your mommy that leather coat she's been wanting. Are they expensive? Well, yeah, sorta. How do you know you win? I win. It's a feeling. It's just something you know. Watch this, he says, and at the moment he releases the dice, he says sharply, natural. The dice kiss the floor, bump the box, and come to rest with a 4 and a 3 on top. Ha! Dad says. Did you win? That's a natural 7. That's a winner. See, if you throw a 7 or 11 on the first throw, you win. Then what do you do? Is the game over? That one is. And then you do it again. I don't quite understand the fun in this, but I don't say anything. Dad shifts his legs because his knees are bad and says, look, Chief, here's how old Dad does it. I'll throw $20 on the table and say, shoot it, and the suckers will cover me, and then I'll do this. And he throws the dice again and shouts, "Eyo!" And I watch them stop at 11. My dad beams and giggles. I wonder why. And I ask, that's not a 7, didn't you lose? Heck no, boy, that's a winner. Remember, 7 or 11 on the first throw is a winner. That's a EO 11. See, 7 or 11 wins on the first throw. Now, if you throw a 2, 3, or 12, you lose. Those numbers are craps. Any other number is called your point, and you have to throw it again to win. If you throw a 7, like let's say you throw a 5 on your first throw, well, you have to throw it again to win. But if you throw a 7 before that second 5, guess what? You lose. Got it? I nod my head because basically I do have it. It all seems to make sense. Let me try it. Dad shifts and lets me kneel next to him. How much you going to bet, Shooter? He asks. I'm not sure if he's serious, and since I have absolutely no money, a sudden wave of disappointment hits me. I look up and sadly and say, I ain't got no money. Dad grins and hugs me with his left arm as he hands me the dice with his right. I'm just kidding, Chief. This is just pretend. Pretend you're betting. Bet 100. No, I say, and pretend to take money from my pocket. I'm just betting $1. Dad slaps a pretend dollar on mine and says, faded. Shoot, sucker. I throw and get a 6. Dad says, C-I-X. Every number has a nickname. 6 is C-I-X. 6 is a good point. It's easy to hit. I throw again. 4. Dad says, Little Joe. Little Joe from Kokomo. Keep throwing. You got to call out your number. Make it pop up. I say 6 as I throw, but they come up 10. Dad says, Big Dick from Boston. Say, come on, dices. Give me that 6. I do, but they rest on 7. Some of Dad's excitement. It's, you're no good at this, Chief. You better stay away from the dice table. He gives me another hug and gets up from the floor, shaking the dice as he walks away. 3 men stand under the yellow light above the pool table playing ship, captain, and crew. They take turns rolling the 3 pairs of dice from the leather bottle. A bartender moves in the shadows from behind the bar, startles me. So you decided to come, huh? What you had to drink? Paps. Sorry. Lone Star. That we got. As he gets the beer, I turn from the bar, lean against it, and watch the men throwing dice. Except for the 3 shaded bulbs above the pool table and a very dimly lit rotating Budweiser display above my head, the room is completely dark. There are a few tables scattered throughout the room, 6 booths against one wall, and what looks like a couple of card tables back in the opposite corner from the pool table. The restroom doors are in the center of the back wall. The bartender places my beer on the bar and asks if I want a glass. No thanks, I reply, take a long drink from the bottle. How many do you expect this evening? Oh, anywhere from a dozen to 20 or so. A lot of money in the game, I ask, hoping not to sound too anxious. A few thousand dollars. Nothing like Vegas, but satisfies us. I'm no high roller now. I just have a few bucks to donate, that's all. Begins the bartender, and he starts to circulate a cloth on the top of the bar in a motion he must have made thousands of times. That's all right. There'll be some boys shooting their $2 a whack and drawing every time they win. Oh, well, hell, I won't do that, I say, taking a sip and feeling a little more comfortable. I try to pay the bartender for the beer, but he says, first one's on the house. So I continue to watch the men at the table, waiting. Finally, the players start to straggle in groups of two and three, a few individuals. They aren't remarkable men. The last two to enter wear jackets, not ties, but they are unmistakably businessmen of some sort. Most are laborers. They wear t-shirts, golf shirts, work shirts, slacks, and Levi's. Some of the men seem to know the others, but it doesn't seem that anyone knows everyone. The only common denominator is the bartender, who knows them all and addresses each by name. A young man, around 25, comes to the bar and orders a double Jack Daniels. He speaks to the bartender in strident yet familiar terms. Hey, Jackson, who won the drawing this week? Not you, fuck off. Jackson, the bartender, pours the whiskey, and as he pushes it forward, the young man playfully grabs his wrist and pulls him hard against the bar. With his free hand, he taps Jackson behind the head. Oh, you're too slow, Jackson, he laughs. Not the hard ass you used to be, or so they say. You're getting old, you know that? Jackson takes the joke in good-naturedly and begins picking up several empty beer cans at one end of the bar. If you say so. Hey, Jackson, when's this big game going to start? I'm ready to win me some money. Soon as everybody gets here. Don't get your panties in a knot. The young man seems to notice me for the first time, but doesn't acknowledge that he has done so. Hey, he says to Jackson, who moves to the front of the bar to gather up some empty cans from the small tables. Is Harry Lang going to be here tonight? What do you think? Oh, now, that old man can throw some dice, but it don't shake me none, because I'm going to clean his old clock tonight. I'm ready. You playing? He addresses this last to me, suddenly, apropos of nothing, and I'm slightly startled. I try not to show it. Yeah, I say. I thought I might, if it was all right with everyone else. Ain't nobody gonna mind, pal. Your money's as good as anybody else's, huh, Jackson? Some of the boys might not like that beard and hair, but don't bother me. I mean, your money'll spend too, won't it? Mm-hmm, I grunt. I mean, hippie money you spend too, won't it, Jackson? Same as American? Last I heard, this guy's manner annoys me. He looks strong, his muscles well-defined. He isn't very handsome, ordinary, actually. His whole appearance, stereotypically country. His hair is of medium length, combed over, no part. His t-shirt fits tight, high up on his deltoids, and it's evident, due to his suntan, that he's accustomed to working outdoors in a work shirt, the sleeves of which come across his bicep. A farmer's tan, some call it. Whether he farms or not, I don't know, and I don't care. I don't like him. I sense something violent about the man, as though he wants to punch something, release something, explode. I decide that I'm in no position to confront him physically since I'm a stranger and have everything stacked against me. I am nervous and wish the game would start. Well, as long as it'll spin, that's all I care about, he goes on. 'Cause no offense, friend, but before long, I'm going to have your money in my pants pocket. Hey, Jackson! Again, he switches the focus of attention suddenly. As he shouts at the bartender, he jerks a large amount of money folded over from his hip pocket and throws it on the bar, saying, look at this! Jackson looks and says, so? What do you want, drinks for the house? Very funny, Jackson, but you won't be laughing when that game starts. How much you think is there? Jackson doesn't get a chance to reply since two more men, plainly dressed, enter and order beer. The young man knows them both. One of the new ones, wearing a green t-shirt with a pocket on the sleeve for a cigarette pack, yells at the young man. Hey, Danny Puckett, where's your sister been? I don't know, man. We don't see much of each other. Don't she work at the drive-in no more? No. I think she got married. Married? The two men look at each other and laugh. God damn, that's a shame. There goes another good piece of ass down the drain. Well, I wouldn't know nothing about that, and I doubt if you would neither. Shit, I could tell you a few things about your little sister, Danny. Yeah, and I could knock your fucking head off, too. How's that? Do what you think is cool, man, but that won't change anything. Truth's the truth. Puckett and the man stare at each other. Puckett backs off, looks away, and returns the money to his left hip pocket. He picks up his drink and walks back to the dice table. I hear the man in the green shirt tell his friend something about Puckett's sister, but I can't make anything out, so I quit trying to eavesdrop. I walk toward the table where the men are still playing the bottle dice game. A 40-ish man with a crew cut holds the leather bottle, shakes it, and rolls. He gets a 6 and a 5 on the first roll. You lucky ass, says one of his adversaries. On his second roll, he misses the 4, but on his third roll, picks up the 4 and 2 6s. Pay me, boys, he says. The old man's hot tonight. Do I see a wad in your pocket, Puckett, or you got a hard on for me? This makes the now sizable crowd of men laugh uproariously. Puckett stands, weaving against the pool table, lightly tapping his fist against the rail. He doesn't see the humor in the man's comment and stares at him unblinkingly. That wad's going to be a big motherfucker before too long, Busher, he says. That's funny, Busher says. Harry Lang told me he was going to take all your money tonight because you was blowing off so much the last time. Well, here I am. If Harry Lang feels foggy, he can leap. I'm right where I said I'd be. Where's Harry Lang? Most you boys saw who the big winner was last August. Harry Lang's had his day. There's a new shooter in this game. Me. He turns to me as though I've done something to irritate him and says, what the hell is your name anyway? I stare at Puckett for a moment. We are the center of attention around the pool table. Except for Jackson and Puckett, no one has said a word to me or made any gesture to make me feel welcome. I still feel lucky, but I am certainly not comfortable. I feel I may as well find out right now if I'm going to be able to relax and participate in this game, or if I should leave before things get any worse. Listen, fella, I begin. I was invited to play in this game by the bartender this afternoon. Now, if you all don't want me in here, just say so, and I'll leave. One of the three men in the bottle dice game speaks up quickly. You're welcome to play here, son. Don't pay no attention to Danny. None of us do. Here you go, he says, and holds out his hand for me to shake. Name's Bob Dennison. I shake his hand and smile. He seems genuine. Before I can say anything, Puckett says, sure, you're welcome here. Hell, all I did was ask your goddamn name. Someone in the group says, don't be so huffy, Danny. That boy's liable to kick the shit out of you. Look at the arms on that boy. Shit. Well, that may be true, but I wish he'd tell me his name before he tries. Ray Stark. See, that wasn't so hard. Pleased to meet you, Stark. I'm Dan Puckett, the baddest ass in Manitowoc County. This last remark brings laughter and derisive comments from the crowd that now fills the area around the pool table. Jackson enters from one side with a money apron around his waist and two sets of dice in his hand, one white and one red. He picks up the leather bottle with the other dice inside and places it on the pool ball rack behind him. Crap game, he sings out. Anybody wants a beer, pay me and go get your own. Cost you $1. Every time you throw the dice, cover the shooter before you make any side bets. Anybody betting heavy on any one man gets first crack at him and pass the dice to your left. He places the dice on the table, and the man to his left, the man in the green shirt, picks up the red ones and shakes them gently. These reds feel mighty good to me. Shoot 10, he says, and throws a $10 bill on the table. I got 5, says one man. You're covered, says Puckett, throwing down $5. Shoot. I watch. A man to my left hands some change to Jackson and says he's getting a beer. Another man says, hey, get me one too, and gives some money to Jackson. The two men on either side of me lay a side bet on Green Shirt's throw, and Green Shirt throws the dice. It comes up 5. 5's his point, says Jackson, raking the dice back to Green Shirt with his stick. Everyone begins talking at once. The game's on in earnest. Side bets spring up all around the table. Green Shirt shakes and rolls again. Fever, baby, he shouts, but rolls a 4. Oh, come on up a step, Dices, he yells, but rolls another 4. You're close, you're close. Now get it, he shouts, but hits a 7. You're easy, Puckett says, and picks up his $10. The dice pass to the next man. I'm 4 shooters away. I stand on the opposite side of the table from Jackson, a little to the right. I want badly to fade someone, but don't have enough money, so I wait until my turn to throw. The wait seems interminable. All the shooters are piddly-ass chicken shits, shooting 5s and 10s, and even gets to Puckett, who feels no compunctions against screaming out, "You chintzy, small-time fuckers, bet some money!" But it does no good. The man to my right bets $10 and comes out with a 7, lets his 20 ride and throws an 8 for his point. He hits the 8. 5 rolls later, drags $30 out, says, "Thank you, boys," throws a 9 for his new point, and soon 7's out. I have the dice. I have them in my hand. They feel good. They feel alive. I know I cannot lose. Shooting 25, I say. Might as well shoot the wad. Fade it, yells Puckett. No, wait a minute, Jackson says. You know the rules. You wait until these boys see if they want any of his action. You're not behind him. You wait your turn. Well, let's go, man. Do it then. You going to fade him or not? Puckett picks up his 2 10s and 5. I'm quickly faded by the 4 men to my right. I shake the dice next to my ear. They rattle dangerously. A rattlesnake's call. They feel right. I throw. They roll up a 10. Big Dick from Boston, someone who had bet against me shouts triumphantly. I'm surprised. My stomach moves in nervousness. Big Dick. Hard point. I try to push all thoughts from my mind. Live in the moment. I shake the dice. I try not to think of anything. I simply try to feel. I try to feel winner. My mind exudes winner. The dice hits the pine 1x8 board at the end of the table and bounces back. One settles at 2. My heart sinks. The other spins and jumps and seems to come up a 5, but hasn't stopped yet, and as it lightly taps the sideboard, flips into a 4. 6. I was so close to losing on the 7. My confidence fades fast. I roll again. 5. I roll once more. Then again. I roll 7 times and still can't get the 10, but I haven't got the 7 either. My confidence flows back, and as I hold the dice, I smile and then throw, and the 10 jumps up immediately. I feel light and relaxed. Those who bet on me are laughing, and those who bet against me are griping. I don't feel quite as golden as before, so I draw 25 from the table and say, "Still shooting 25. The same men fade me, the others make their side bets, and I roll a quick 7. "Natural," says Jackson. "Shoot the 50, I say. The 4 original faders take $5 apiece. "What you got left?" asks Puckett. "I'll take it," he says, and throws down $30. I roll a 6 for my point, and a few throws later, make it. I decide not to be greedy and drag $80, saying, "Shooting 20. "Me go to hell," Puckett says. "Man comes in here, wins some money, and quits on us." "Can I drag any time I want to?" I ask Jackson. "Sure can, partner," one of the men says. "Shooting 20, I repeat. "Y'all boys, let me make a few passes like that, and you won't see me dragging. Hell no, I'll break you all," Puckett declares. I roll a 6, and there are 2 extra bets placed on my point. I roll 2 more times and then 7 out. I keep the $80 out on the table and put my original 25 inside my billfold, promising myself to leave it there no matter what. I'll simply play the rest of the night on the 80 I just won. But it doesn't work that way. I begin to fade the other shooters, and I begin losing. I win $5 or $10 occasionally and quickly lose $20. Puckett stands across the table from me. He is hitting the numbers. True to his word, he doesn't drag. He craps out twice during his turn. Otherwise, he'd be several hundred dollars ahead. He ends his run around $100 or so to the good. I notice that he, too, is fading other shooters and losing. I have $30 of my winnings left when the dice come back to me. I drop it all on the table and say, shooting 30, and pick up the dice. A large, bald-headed man, whom I hadn't seen enter the game, fades me immediately. It isn't his turn to do so, but no one objects. As he puts his money down, he says, shoot, sucker, in a deep bass voice. I throw the dice, and they come up 3. Craps. Someone shouts, crap! Someone else says, you're bumping up against Harry Lang. And I reach for my billfold. Fuck Harry Lang, I think. I take out $20, leaving a 5 just in case. I throw out the 20, and Harry Lang picks up $40, leaving 2/10 from his winnings. Puckett says, let me take 10 of it, Harry. I sense an uneasy relationship between the two men. Puckett, the big mouth, the braggart, is a toad before Lang. He doesn't even look at Puckett and simply says, you faded. Shoot, kid. I throw a 5. Lang says, I'll never make it, and offers me odds on a side bet. I ignore him. After 3 more rolls, I 7 out. I have $5 left. The fear, the butterflies are gone. I feel utter dread. All I can think of is Sarah's face. The sadness. Puckett shakes the dice. He bets $30. I'm hot tonight, Harry. You better keep your money in your pocket. Several men take 5s, and there's 5 left when it gets to me. I throw my last bill on the table. Puckett screams, faded and fucked, and throws a 7. My stomach seems to come up into my throat. I turn from the table and hear Puckett cackle and shout, shoot it! I take a step away from the table and hear Jackson call out to me, get yourself a beer, buddy, on the house. I walk outside. Except for crickets, it's very quiet. I lean against the fender of someone's truck. I feel numb, tired. I sit in the camper and watch Sarah sleep. She looks younger while asleep. I touch her hair. Wonderful, long, black hair. Sometimes she sits nude on the bed brushing her hair, which sometimes covers her breasts and sometimes reveals them. I reach down and pick up the money box. I open it and hold the money in my hand. I look at Sarah sleeping, put the 4 ones back in the box, close it, shove 20 in my pocket, put the box back where it was, and go back inside to the game. I get the free beer and walk over to the table. I thought I'd clean you out, boy, Puckett says to me loudly. I don't respond, but I take a drink from the can and watch as one of the men shoots. You don't talk much, do you? Puckett says, baiting me. Maybe he is drunk. I don't know. I don't care. He has a nice-sized wad of bills stuck in his fist. Hey! He yells at me, I'm talking to you, loser. I am upset at losing my money. He is making me even madder, but I know that's what he wants, so I smile at him and say, huh? As though I hadn't heard him. He changes the subject. Is that your cunt wagon out there? If you mean that good-looking 3/4-ton Chevy truck with chassis mount camper, yeah, I say. Are you one of them hippies? He says, looking away as a shooter sevens out in order to pick up some money from the table, then looks back at me and says, huh, are you? Do I look like one? You got one of those beards, don't you? You look like a hippie to me. I don't like hippies. I'm prejudiced. There are a few chuckles from those nearest us who can hear what Puckett says over the noise of the gambling men. I don't like niggers neither, he continues, but I don't like hippies the most. I ignore him and watch the game. Harry Lang is winning steadily from one of the businessmen across the table from him. I take my 2 tens out and Puckett sees him. Oh, got more money. Ain't that nice? See if you can hold on to it till the next time I roll and then put it down. I want to see if I can corner all the hippie money in the market. I drink my beer and watch the gambling. I see the businessman write a check, toss it to Harry Lang, and Lang toss several bills back. I can't see how much money has passed, but it must be over $100. Puckett yells over the table at me, asking again if I have any pussy out in the pussy wagon, and then he shuts up for a while. Finally, the dice come back to me. Shooting 20, I say, and throw down the 10s. I begin to win. I make several passes and pull out $140 before I lose. I stick half of it in my left hip pocket again, swearing not to touch it, no matter what. When Puckett gets the dice back, he shoots 25 and I cover 10 of it. He wins and lets the 50 ride. I cover 30 of that. He loses, screaming, "Double crossing cocksuckers!" at the dice and throwing them hard at the opposite backboard. A die flips up and off the table. This brings a hush to the table, a definite no-no. One of the guys in T-shirts finds the die and returns it to the table. Jackson examines it closely as though he was in Vegas. One of the other players tells Puckett if he doesn't like the way the dice are rolling to get back off the table. Puckett says, "Fuck you, you don't run my life." And the other guy says, "If I did, I'd tell you to grow up and quit acting like a damn little kid." Puckett yells, "If you feel froggy, leap." Then it settles down after everyone else begins mumbling and telling them both to shut up and let's shoot dice. Harry Lang gets the dice and hits 2 7s on his first 2 throws. I lose $20 and decide to pull out instead of covering him again. Puckett, however, sticks with him, and Lang makes his point twice more before losing. Lang is winning steadily, but he doesn't say much about it or draw attention to it. He smiles and chews gum. I notice he hasn't had anything to drink. He came to win money, and that's what he's doing. I have a good idea now who the losers are and begin betting against them. They continue to lose, and I put $30 more in my hip pocket, saying, "I'm not going to touch it." By the time I get the dice back, I'm really ready to throw. I bet $40 and 7. I let it ride. Puckett, who has covered 15 of my original $40 bet, takes 50 of the 80. Someone else takes the 30, and I roll a 5. "Your blind luck's at an end now, old buddy," Puckett says when he sees the 5. I feel cocky, so I ask him if he wants to give me odds on the 5. "I ain't stupid, son. Do I look stupid?" I am extremely tired of listening to Puckett's voice. I hold the dice and lean across the table, looking directly at Puckett. The game becomes quiet. I feel the other men, too, are now very tired of Puckett. I feel even though I am a stranger, they will support me before they will him. So I say, "Okay, then, I'll give you 15 to 10 odds. How's that?" "Bet!" he shouts and peels the 10 off his tiny wad of bills and slaps it down on the felt-covered tabletop. I start to roll, but Harry Lang quietly but suddenly says to me, "Hey, boy, I'll take that bet, too." I look at Lang at the end of the table, his gleaming shaved head giving his ugly face the aspect of a Turkish wrestler, his huge forearms leaning on the table rail. He stares back at me unflinchingly with no trace of emotion. I wonder what he feels inside. I look in his eyes. I smile and say, "Bet." I throw the dice so they roll and stop right in front of Harry Lang. 5.
"You lucky ass motherfucker," Puckett says,
jumping back from the table, slapping his hand on the wooden railing. "That shit's getting deep in here, boys." "You lost, Danny," someone says. "Why don't you just face it, man?"
"Shit, that asshole can't throw dice. He don't even know what he's doing. Goddamn motherfucker don't even belong in here."
I pick up the side bets with Puckett and Lang, and Jackson says, "You got $160 out there. What are you going to do?" "I'll shoot 100. I put the 20 from the side bets plus 60 from the table in my hip pocket, along with the 100 I put there before. My table bet is faded. I try to keep my mind blank and allow the dice to roll freely. I feel good. I feel like a winner, like a definite winner. I throw and roll a 6. Easy point. There are several quick side bets placed as I pick up the dice. I notice Harry Lang seems oblivious to everything going on. He stands looking over the heads of the men standing across from him. He simply stares, no expression on his face, as though jealous of my good fortune and choosing to ignore the whole process. I throw, and into my mind before the dice hit the board flies a mental image of dice at rest, two threes on top. The dice hit the board. One immediately turns up a three, the other spinning rapidly on the green felt. Those betting against me scream, four, while those betting on me scream, three. My body feels supercharged as I watch. I feel electric. The die stops with a three on top, and everyone shouts. There is much movement, passage of money from one hand to another. I only have $200 on the table, but it isn't the money that matters so much to me. It is the unbelievable thrill of knowing something will happen before it happens. And knowing there is no way I can know this. That is beyond all logic, beyond all science. And yet there it is. It is the closest thing to a spiritual experience I have ever encountered. And it is so perfect. And it is so true that it cannot be maintained. And like all things, it passes. I decide to drag 190 and only shoot $10. But as I reach out, Puckett fairly leaps on the table, covering the money, yelling something incomprehensible. Jackson reaches for his hip pocket, and at the same time, the noise abates somewhat. I don't know whether Jackson's reaching for a gun or a sap, so I hesitate, apprehensive over what might happen next. My 200 remains in the middle of the table. Puckett holds it down with both hands. "He didn't pay, and he don't get this money!" Puckett sputters, looking up at Jackson, who still has his hand behind him. "Just back off, Danny. I'll settle this," Jackson says to Puckett. Puckett takes his hand off my money, stands erect, and says, "He didn't pay his dollar, Jackson. House rules say you pay before you shoot. He didn't pay no dollar. He don't get that money." Some of the men say, "Oh, that's right." Others mumble, "Bullshit. That don't mean nothing." One man says, "Hell, Jackson, I know for a fact. Couple guys forgot to pay. You didn't say nothing." My stomach trembles. I don't know what to say, so I keep my mouth shut. Jackson looks at me and says, "Give me a dollar." I toss one across the table. "Take your money," he says. I reach out for the money, hoping that'll be it, but knowing that it probably won't end there. As I rake the money in, Puckett picks up somebody's beer glass and throws it against the wall. "I'll be goddamn if you ever see me back in this fucking hole again, Jackson. It'll be one cold day in hell, buddy," Jackson says quietly. "That's fine, Puckett. I'm sick of having to listen to you anyway. Let's go. What are you betting, son?" I have the money gathered in, and I want to quit, but know if I do, I'll have to confront Puckett and maybe others. I toss a $10 bill out and pick up the dice. "Shoot," Harry Lang orders, covering my bet. As I shake the dice, preparing to roll, Puckett pushes back from the table, grumbling and walking behind me. I am aware of him there, passing, and as he does, I roll and get a four. And as Jackson calls the number, I feel a sudden, savage jolt from behind that knocks me hard up against the table. So hard, I have to quickly throw my hands out to keep from hitting my head on the top of the felted slate. As I right myself, I glimpse Puckett, frustrated, standing behind me with his fists clenched and raised. "Come on, cocksucker," he says. I focus my attention on the table, try to ignore Puckett. I am afraid, but my pride won't let me show the fear. I don't want to fight him, but I have to preserve my dignity. I look at Jackson and smile and shake my head as though to say, "This boy Puckett is hopeless. I won't waste my time with him." "What's my point?" I ask Lang. "Little Joe," says brusquely. Then I see him glance behind me and say, "Don't, Puckett!" Puckett is still behind me. I hear him snarl, "God damn chicken shit pussy," and I fear he might blast me again from behind, but I don't react and throw the dice. I seven out, and Lang picks up the money. I notice two of the businessmen leave the table and exit without so much as a goodbye to anyone. Puckett comes back to the table and says, "Way to go, Harry. We'll clean that bastard's ass yet." "I thought you were leaving, Danny," Jackson says.
"I apologize, Jackson, goddammit. Okay?"
"You ought to apologize to him.
Fuck him. I ain't no big thing. Let's shoot. Who's the shooter?
The man on my left picks up the dice, bets $10, and I cover him automatically. I feel they expect me to risk some of the money I won. There's some side bets made. I want to pull out all my money and count it, but I know that is an impossibility. The shooter loses, and I pick up the $20. Puckett gets the dice. Someone asks him where his big wad went. Someone else says, "Did you pay your dollar, Danny?" Puckett pulls a dollar out of his pants pocket and snaps it on the table and says, "There." He then pulls a wad of money out of the other pocket and counts out $100 on the table. "How's that for a wad, boys? Is that a wad or what?" Someone reaches for a 10 to cover, but Puckett says, "No, wait a minute. Let my old buddy fade it. Let's see who's the luckiest." "No, it's okay," I say. "They can take your money. I don't want it." "You all better hold on a minute," Harry Lang rumbles with his Old Testament voice. "I came here to shoot dice, not fuck around. I'm taking 50 over here. Boy, you take the other 50. He says this last to me. My luck feels dissipated, but I figure with what little I might have left, coupled with Lang's, we can't lose. This thought must also have rattled around in Puckett's mind, because he throws a 12 on the first roll. I expect him to blow up, but he doesn't scream, shout, or flail, merely pushes away from the table, says, "I pass," and walks over to the bar and gets a beer. There are bemused glances around the table and several snickers from the men. Lang smiles broadly and says, "Well, well," as he counts out $100 and shoves the remainder of the cash over to me. I don't count it, just pick it up. Make it tidy, put it in my pocket. I want badly to count what I have. I know it must be several hundred, so I mumble that I need to take a piss, head for the toilet. I enter one of the stalls and immediately take out my money and count it. I have $510. Subtracting the $45 I started with, I figure I won $465. I become uneasy. That's too much. I know none of the others are thrilled at a stranger coming in here and taking their money, even though most of it is Puckett's. Someone opens the door and I put the money back in my pocket and flush the toilet. The game is breaking up. Four men remain at the pool table shooting for lower stakes. Puckett, withdrawn, quiet, stands at the bar toying with a beer. Harry Lang has changed from his no-nonsense attitude into a cheerful, garrulous man. He stands at the bar with a beer in one hand and a shot glass in the other. The pale light from the Budweiser sign makes his bald head seem luminous. He laughs and talks loudly with the men around him. I look quickly for a back door, thinking I might slip out before they notice me, but Lang calls out, there he is. "Hey, boy, come on over here and buy us all a beer." I try to think of alternatives. How can I get out? How can I leave without upsetting or offending anyone? I can't think of any way to do it, so I go over to the bar. Lang makes a place for me. "Sure," I say, I reckon I can afford a round or two." Time passes and Harry Lang buys a round. I buy another round. I become a captive audience of a small group that consists of Lang, the man in the golf shirt, the man in the green t-shirt, and one of the businessmen. They complain about the local health department. Someone opposes the opening of a new sewer line. I don't care who opposes what, but several times Lang says, "Goddamn health department, idiots." Most of the men are gone. I try to locate a clock, but can't, so I wait until the businessman reaches for his beer and see by his watch that it's almost 2:00. Puckett stands alone, refusing to join us when asked by one of the men, leaning against the bar where the two sections form an L. I glance at him and notice, to my discomfort, that he's staring at me. "You're around, bub," Lang says to me. "Huh?" I sputter. Jackson sets up 5 beers. I reach for my money. "Don't open mine, Carl," businessman says to Jackson. "Gotta go." "Come on, Mick," Lang says. "You can drink one more." "Nah, one for the road." The little businessman puts his hand on Lang's massive shoulder and rubs it familiarly and says, "Some of us gotta get up and go to work in the morning." The man in the green shirt agrees, and they leave. Jackson puts 2 beers back in the cooler. I peel a 5 off my roll and drop it on the bar. You did all right tonight, Lang says to me. Yeah, I had a little luck. How much you got there? I don't know. I haven't had a chance to count it.
You are a lying sack of shit,
Puckett mutters loudly enough for all to hear. No one speaks. Lang watches me out of the corner of his eye. Puckett has switched from beer to whiskey, and he has an empty shot glass dangling from his hand. I turn and stare at Puckett. I know this is dangerous, but I'm tired of his abuse, and he stares back. You done with your drink there, Danny? Jackson asks. He reaches across the bar, pulls Puckett's hand away from the shot glass. You done with it? Okay, you had enough. Take off now. Go on, get out of here. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? I break away from Puckett's gaze. I figure this might be a good time for me to leave. Listen, I begin, y'all boys have really been good to me and treated me nice and all, but I think I better get on out of here if you don't mind.
Oh, hell no. Go ahead, partner,
Lang says. Is Jackson going to let you sleep in his parking lot tonight? Oh, well, I thought I'd drive on down the road a piece to the next roadside park, maybe.
Jackson says, oh, you don't want to do that, son. No sense driving anywhere this late at night.
Go ahead and camp out there tonight. You won't hurt nothing. Get a good early start in the morning.
Well, okay, thanks a lot, Jackson. I appreciate it.
I notice uncomfortably that Puckett is still staring at me, and I hear him mumble something about Vietnam. Goddamn punk. My only intent is to get out the door and into the camper. Then I'll wait until everyone leaves so Sarah and I can get out of the county. Better yet, out of the state. Y'all take it easy now, I say as I move away from the bar and towards the door. I expect someone to stop me, but they don't. I walk across the gravel driveway towards the camper, and I hear a muffled sound. The bar door bursts open, and framed inside it is Puckett. Someone grabs at his hand, and he comes out sideways, his momentum carrying him through the opening.
Hey!
He shouts. I stop, turn, wait. He takes a couple of steps towards me.
You and me is gonna get it right now, baby.
As he walks forward, he beckons me to him with his left hand. I stay where I am, hoping I can think of a way to get out of this, trying to control my fear. I think of the rifle inside the camper, but Puckett's too close.
Listen, Puckett, maybe I can talk to him, bluff him down. Don't try to get bad with me because you lost a little money. If you can't handle losing, you oughtn't to gamble.
I figure he probably won't respond to talk, but I don't expect him to move as quickly as he does. And without hesitation, he walks up to me, lashes out, and smacks me hard between my eye and my ear. I am stunned, but I don't fall. I step back and bring my hands up, and as I do, he quickly hits me in the stomach. This doesn't hurt or bother me at all, and it gives me more time to clear my head. I swing a right and a left, but the right misses his head and hits his shoulder, and the left to his mouth doesn't faze him. He lunges at me and grabs my neck and his right arm. He tries to flip me to the ground, but I bend over and pull my head from his grasp. By this time, Lang and Jackson are trying to separate us. Lang has me by the chest, lifting me off the ground with his gorilla-like arms. Since the first punch, everything happens so fast that I'm having a hard time keeping everything straight. As Lang holds me, I hear shouting from all sides. I see Jackson wrestle with Puckett, see Puckett tear loose from him and leap at me. Lang tries to turn me from Puckett, but doesn't do a very good job. I don't actually see Puckett hit me, but I feel it. He hits me so hard that Lang drops me. Then he kicks me in the head. Black. A blow to the head is a unique experience. It can't be duplicated artificially. Drugs or alcohol come close at a certain point to creating the numbness, the slow motion effect, but they omit the transcendent pain. And each jawjacker is different. One blow might put you on the edge of consciousness, a strange world where reality exists, but nothing matters. Your body is suddenly gone, and you see everything from behind an invisible protective shield. You can see the final knockout punch coming, and you know it's the knockout punch. You watch it, but don't really feel it, and the lights go out. Another kind of punch can knock you out on your feet, It only lasts momentarily, and you regain consciousness as you fall, only to hit the ground. Here you have two types of pain, the first sharp, the latter dull. Often the fall will put you out again. When I come to, my first sensation is the mixed smell of stone and soil. It's good, rich. I'm confused. Suddenly, with a rush, the last few minutes come back to me, and I open my eyes only to become confused again, momentarily, until I realize I'm looking at a dimly lit telephone pole. From my face-down position, it is at first an alien object. I realize someone is touching me. Someone is trying to get in my pocket. My money pocket. Pocket! I try to twist around to get at him, but he clamps my head into the dirt. I feel a sharp object at the back of my neck. A knife. Lay still, motherfucker. That isn't Puckett's voice, I think. That sounds like Jackson. Jackson? I ask in a husky voice. There's no answer. He has me on my side and is feeling about the inside of my left hip pocket. The money isn't there. Hey, I feebly protest. He shoves my face further into the grass and soil and says, you feel this knife? Uh-huh. Where's the money? Pocket. Which one, asshole? Front. Right. He flips me over on my back and I breathe in the sweet air. He kneels with one knee on my stomach, the knife at my throat. I wonder how close my windpipe is to my skin. He has his hand in my pocket. He's trying to pull the money out, but my Levi's are too tight, and he's having difficulty. Quickly, in rapid succession, I hear a door open, see Jackson's head jerk up, hear a rifle shot and a woman shout, "Stop!" Jackson freezes with his hand still in my pocket. It is Sarah. "Throw that knife away," she shouts. We aren't that far away, and she doesn't have to speak that loudly, but I guess she's nervous. Jackson tosses the knife aside. "Get up," she commands. He tries to rise, but his hand is hung up in my pocket, and I have to help him get it free. Finally, he stands. I stand. He starts to say something, but I hit him as hard as I can in the face. He staggers backwards and hits the ground, his face a frozen mask of pain. My knuckles throb. I haven't put him out, but he is feeling exceptional pain, and that's what I want. I think about kicking him in the head a few times, but decide against it and start kicking him in the stomach and ribs, hoping to break a bone. He rolls on his stomach to get away from me and raises his ass, giving me a perfect shot at his balls, and I kick him there hard, and he groans and falls in a heap. I want to do more. Adrenaline courses through my body. I want to hurt him more. But Sarah stops me, screaming, "Ray, you dumbass, get in here!" I do as she says. I feel positively charged. I don't want to stop. I want to break something. Anything, tear something apart, to run until I fall and then to roll and to keep moving, to act. I know she's right, and try to get in the driver's side of the truck. Sarah stops me and says she'll drive. I get in, we drive. I sit, and as I think of all that has happened, of the money I won, I get happier and happier. The dull pains in my head don't matter. Nothing matters. I'm ecstatic. After a few miles, Sarah pulls the camper in at a roadside rest. I hop out and release my pent-up emotions by whooping, yelling, jumping around in the darkness like a madman. Sarah counts the money.